An article in Wednesday's New York Times notes that in the last quarter of 2012, stop and frisk encounters with the NYPD decreased by some 28%. And despite predictions to the contrary, last year also had the lowest number of homicides in half a century.
There's no causation there.
Glenn Martin is Vice President of Public Affairs at the Fortune Society.
And in fact, massive amounts of stop and frisk and low-level arrests and convictions actually has the opposite effect of diminishing public safety, reducing police legitimacy, and essentially creating entire communities that will not call the police when they see more serious crime happening.
You've had personal experience with stop and frisk. What's happened to you?
I lived in Midwood, Brooklyn, up until about 2.5 years ago. And when I lived in Midwood, a somewhat middle class, upper middle class, mostly white neighborhood, I wasn't ever stopped and frisked, to be honest, in that community. And that's because that community wasn't flooded with rookie police officers, didn't have Operation Impact as part of that community. Never stopped and frisked. And then I moved to Harlem, Central Harlem, where I live now. I'm actually on Committee Board 10 in Central Harlem. And there's so many police in that neighborhood that one cannot help but have interactions with police if you're a person of color who lives in that neighborhood. And I've had 3 interactions with police officers, sometimes the same police officers that say hello and good evening to me when I'm dressed in a suit coming home from work, literally are the same officers that stop me when I'm in a pair of jeans and boots and sort of just in the neighborhood, if you will. And the interaction is very embarrassing, it's very shameful. It's rude most times. In one situation, when I started asking questions about why he was digging his hands in my pocket instead of just patting my pocket, after a few moments, I guess he realized that he probably stopped the wrong person and someone who had some level of knowledge about what his rights were. These are 2 police officers that hopped out of a vehicle. They got back into the vehicle relatively quickly, and when they went to drive off, literally the license plate of the car was bent upward, so you couldn't read the license plate on the car. So I've had my own experience with being stopped and frisked. I've also many times witnessed younger guys stopped and frisked in Harlem for unlawful congregation. I mean, I have a hard time understanding that. If you live in Upper Manhattan, there are not many spaces that are meant for congregation, and people tend to congregate on the corner or walk in bunches down the block and stop and talk. And, you know, there's no benches, there's not many parks. And the idea of stopping guys and frisking them, and then, you know, as insulting as that is, especially because there's rarely any evidence of reason for the stop initially, but adding insult to injury is citing them with unlawful congregation in a place like Harlem.
What do you think the police response should be to this hardly surprising information that reducing stop and frisks does not increase crime as the New York Post and Mayor Bloomberg and others had predicted it would?
First of all, I'm always surprised at the mayor's support for stop and frisk because the mayor has invested over $50 million of his own money in his Young Men's Initiative, his YMI initiative, which is an effort to get young men of color into the labor market, educated and securely housed. And stop and frisk is so counterproductive to that I'm really surprised that he would engage in both of these behaviors simultaneously. One is an admission that you get to public safety by doing things like getting people employed and so on. And the other one seems like quite the opposite message. But I think the message to Commissioner Kelly and Mayor Bloomberg and other folks needs to be that we need to invest our limited law enforcement resources where we can have the most impact. I'm not suggesting that stop and frisk is useless, but I am suggesting that police officers need to find a true reasonable suspicion for stopping people, and that reasonable suspicion cannot be synonymous with the color of a person's skin. That shouldn't be enough to be defined as reasonable suspicion, and unfortunately it is. So this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for redeployment of police officers, retraining of police officers, and better utilization of what is the largest standing army anywhere, to be honest. We have a significant police force here in New York City, and they do great work, but they could be better deployed. And I can't tell you how often frontline police officers tell me that they hate the quotas. They hate the idea of having to stop large numbers of young people of color to make the numbers. And so I think even the frontline staff would find this to be refreshing, to be able to do what they learned in the academy, which is to do real policing where you're doing investigations and you're only stopping people who are showing evidence of suspicion of having committed a crime or perhaps being poised to commit a crime.
Despite all the complaints and evidence over the years of stop and frisk's inefficiency, if not illegality, Mayor Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Kelly have both adamantly defended and supported the program. Is it going to take a federal court ruling to finally bring this practice under control or end it?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's too bad, but it seems like litigation is the way we're going to get the results that we're looking for in terms of severely rolling back a lot of these stop and frisk policies. Or, who knows, maybe we'll get an enlightened new mayor that recognizes that stop and frisk in its current iteration is illegal and diminishes public safety and does away with the current commissioner. And hopefully, if not through litigation and the courts making it clear that this violates people's civil rights, what we'll end up with is a new mayor who is much more open to taking a look at what's happening in other places around the country that's working and adopting some of those practices. In a city that's so resource-rich, I'm always surprised that when a community is seeing evidence of high crime and violence that we simply deploy law enforcement only. I think that we should be thinking about mobilizing a vast array of resources to the communities that are directly impacted. Putting up a tower that reflects a prison tower and flooding communities with rookie police officers as part of Operation Impact simply reinforces for those communities that we don't value them, that we don't think they also would like to increase public safety in their communities. And we desensitize them to jail and prison, ultimately, by occupying their communities and policing their communities as if they're Rikers Island. We're still on full throttle with our NYPD machine as if this were the 1980s and we're knee-deep in the crack epidemic. We're far from that. Our jail population is down, our prison population is down, and crime is down. And NYPD doesn't seem to recognize that and is not shifting gears.
Glenn Martin is Vice President of Public Affairs at the Fortune Society.